Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is an award-winning podcast in partnership with Sowetan. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. So, every week we go through whatever we've recorded and we check how things are doing. And it still depresses me to this day that we have views that are sometimes 80 times more than the subscriptions. And I ask myself the question, why? Why would you like to view this content but not subscribe to it? And, I mean, it's at no cost to you. So I plead again. Please subscribe. This is the only way we can make money out of this, and I have to survive, right? At the moment, I'm not making money because you guys don't subscribe. Guys, honestly, the views are amazing. Thank you very much for them. But click on this button called subscribe. And Bob is your uncle. Now, my guest this week, must listen to this introduction. You swear I'm speaking about myself, right? You swear. Right? He's a podcaster, a broadcaster, an author, a columnist. He's a funny guy, like seriously funny guy. One of the few funny guys I can say they're funny, because other people claim they're funny, but they're not. I suppose the one difference, maybe two, that I have with him is that he comes from Boksburg. As you know, I mean, I wouldn't come from Boksburg, but originally from KZN, which is the second difference. Ndumiso Ngcobo is my guest, and I'm so finally glad to have you here, mate.
Oh, it's great. It's great. I've had you on my podcast.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I thought I was bribing you enough to bring you here.
Should we be letting people in on the fact that I took great umbrage at the fact that when we were chatting about this, you were like, yeah, you want to talk about me being from Brakpan? And I had to say to you, listen, I know for a lot of people, they think that the Boerewolsgurten is just that after this, Gilulu is just kind of the
is that where it begins?
And then you just think Brakpan is the same as Benoni and Boksburg.
I honestly cannot tell the difference.
There is a grading system.
You are...
I live in Boksburg.
Yeah. Not Brakpan. And it's different.
Very different. Very different.
But you... So, and that would also be different from, like, say, Benoni?
Benoni has got a very different vibe. Hmm. And those of us who live there know. Benoni is more... What are they called? I'll say this word in any case, and because I can get into trouble, and I want you to get into trouble.
Yeah, please. I haven't been in trouble.
That's where all the salt pille lived. The British.
Yeah.
It's more English.
Yeah.
Than Boksburg.
Really.
It's more Afrikaans. Yeah.
Really.
But I also used to live. So I've lived in Benoni. When I first went to the East Rand, I lived in Benoni, but I was working in Boksburg, and then I bought a house in Springs, and now I'm in Boksburg.
What,
I love this place.
What's with you and the East Rand? I mean, you know, look, I have some explanation of myself, but I want you to tell me yours first.
You know what it is? First of all, it was just purely by a coincidence. You know, I'd hate to be a liar and tell you things that didn't. I just so happened to 25 years ago to get a job at a great company, Unilever. And they've got a factory in Boksburg.
Yeah.
There by Commissioner Street in Boksburg. And I started working there. And when I first got to Boksburg, I remember every weekend, my now wife, back then we were just dating, we met at work. We would leave the East Rand on Friday. We were like, no, we got,
yeah.
We're like, no, we are leaving Planet Boksburg. We used to call it Planet Boksburg and so on. And then we kind of had to live there because we worked there. And then after a while, you get used to the place. And I realized, and I think this is for me far more retrospective, is the fact that I've always lived in small towns, unfashionable places.
Yeah.
So I was born in Hammersteg, where Fred Kumalo comes from, right?
Sipho Kumete. That's my reference. You know?
Sipho Kumete did not come actually from Hammersteg.
Oh.
So Sipho Kumete is from Mkumbane.
Really?
Chesterfield. BBK would kill
you. I wonder why he loved, I mean, even the time I spent, he always spoke
about Hammersteg.
Hammersteg, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I mean, he did have quite a lot of life in Hammersteg. And I might be wrong, he might actually have been born there, but, you know, he's
ended up with the BBKs of this world.
Yeah, he ended up with Chesterfield. But in any case, you know, And it's got a feel, the East Rand has got a feel that I'm very used to, of a very unassuming, laid back place. And it's got far more KZN energy than the
Well,
Rand.
that's where I was going to come to.
Yeah, so, it's got
I've always energy. Associated the East Rand with you guys were coming to Johannesburg. And the first lights you saw were the East Rand, and that's where you stopped.
And we just thought, this
is it, right? I mean, it's like the guys who live in the Vaal. They were coming from Lesotho, coming to Johannesburg, and they saw the lights in the Vaal, and like, I'm on a refugee like out there.
Yes, I feel like I'm forced to. That's just really
like. Forced to last. I was in a taxi. I was in a taxi from Debs. You know, I studied there, and dead of night, and this passenger says, "Wait, driver." I'll never forget that moment, like 1991 or so. So I think that's what happened to all of you guys coming down here.
Yeah, because we can laugh about it now. During the violence of the 1990s,
yeah.
I mean, wasn't that one of the things that all the street committees, when they were not sure whether this guy is Inkatha or whatever, they could just show him a five rand.
Note.
It was a note. What color?
With
Jan
van purple. With Jan van Rivek.
Zagrinle. My 2-5 land.
That's it. So I always wondered, why would you leave this? I get it. But then, you guys are stratified, right? Because I think the guys from Alberton think that they live in the northern suburbs of the East Rand.
We don't even want them. I think Joburg City can have Albertine. We don't want it in the Ekurhuleni in any case. But also, I think, some of those things you kind of reverse engineer.
Yeah.
Where my wife and I have had all the opportunity. And right now, because as we are busy recording, this is January 2026.
Yeah.
Our last born is now going off to university, right? And this is part of the
conversation you're going to have. Yeah.
So we've just realized, Tebogo and I, that we can actually live anywhere. And the reason that we stayed there is, I think a lot of people don't actually realize just how good the schools are in the East Rand.
Really?
Noni Box. Oh, beautiful
school. I would have thought that's where they taught the National Party to be the National Party.
No. You've got like really, really good schools. Like, you know, my sons started at CPC, and there was like a Montessori, and the St. Bastards and whatever. So the last one, I think, was at Ashton.
Yeah.
And we did not want to disrupt their education. So we were like, no, let them finish high school.
Yeah.
And then we will possibly move. And us being us, we're not likely to actually go to where all the Lani, you know, fashionable.
So you're not even going to go to the New York of the East Rand, which is Bedford View?
Nah.
Which is more Sicily, though. But then
we'll probably jump and get on the R21 and go Pretoria side.
It's time you went to her part of the world, right?
Yeah. And she comes
from... fair. I know she comes from that part of the world.
So I think that...
we can't tell Munda. I can't
believe it. We'll see.
Don't do that to yourself.
Why?
Pretoria. With respect to all the climate from...
What's wrong with Pretoria?
The question is, what's right with Pretoria?
No, but I just... I've always been partial to Pretoria. Again, a significantly more laid back.
Yeah.
I'm not a park town person. And I'm just glad that my children just never became those children that are cool kids that hang out at the Rosebank Mall.
Yeah.
Of course, now they're at
Post-matric, yeah. They're going to find themselves and they'll rebel against these parents who kept them on the East Rand.
I don't care what they do. I mean, from now on, I've done my bit. They can be whoever they want to be. Right?
But it didn't begin here, right? It began in the lab. Your life began in the lab.
My life... Well, I mean, did it really? You know, my first job was in an NGO, a Catholic NGO, Nocha. I'm a very Catholic boy.
I know.
My first job was as a national coordinator for the Catholic Association, Catholic Association of Students Association. Yeah.
Really?
Catholic Students Association.
Wow. It was a full-time job. It was a paying job. Yeah.
You know, this is when I first
came. Catholics don't like paying.
1994.
Yeah.
I lived in Mayfair and Homestead Park and so on. And then went through teaching. I kind of fell into teaching.
Teaching, yeah.
Mathematics and biology and science and then decided, you know what? And the only reason I left teaching was I still love teaching is because it just didn't pay money.
Yeah.
So I decided, no, let me go and make myself more fashionable. So I went to what was then the, you know, Natal Tech and did some food technology.
Yeah.
And went to Unilever, which is where I started in quality assurance.
Yeah.
Well, first quality control, which is different from quality assurance. Then went into R&D, which is where I really cut my teeth. Making margarine, making fats and oils. And pretty good at it, if I dare say so myself.
Well,
you know,
I don't have a reason to doubt that. Right? So, you know, I mean, on Facebook, once in a while, you'll drop something, right? And,
yeah.
And of course, in our private conversations and when you chill, when you used to have a drink, you know.
When I used to.
Right? You drop stuff. I mean, one of the most amazing things you dropped on me, and I'm not sure how I can sanitize it here, right?
Mm.
But we're talking about the hygiene of the nether parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, no, actually, you're much safer with what lies behind you than what is in front of you. I have never forgotten that.
Okay. I know what you're saying.
Like, you know, because everyone of us thinks, you know, it's dirtier there because it's got...
Nah. So microbiologically, I think kissing someone in the mouth with tongue is significantly dirtier than going either, you know, in front of there or even behind.
Wow.
Or even
why did you leave that world then? Especially because you said to me you left because you thought you should get into better paying situations, and then you leave to become a bloody author and like, it doesn't make sense to me.
You know what it was? You know, and there are many versions of why it is that happened. So I am one of those people who are extremely rooted in rationality. I did major in microbiology and biochemistry, right? So the thing about it is that even though I don't really, there are things that I believe, you know, otherworldly things, you know, I'm not even religious. I'm an agnostic and so on. My agnosticism, goes all the way.
His immediate younger brother is a Catholic priest.
My immediate younger brother is a Catholic priest. But in any case, I don't believe in things. And, you know, when I was younger and more impetuous and more impatient, I used to call it hocus pocus, all of it, including amadlozi.
Yeah.
And people used to get very annoyed with me for saying those kinds of things. But in any case, I am getting a massage. Very long story short, I'm getting a massage from this woman who sees things, and she's she's a seer, clairvoyant,
yeah,
and whatever. And she's like, oh, also part of my business is this thing. Would you like me to give you a reading? But I mean, I'm naked and she's busy massaging me. It's very difficult to say no to such a thing. She says to me, I can sense that your body is, that your inner core is at 180 degrees to your outer core, that you are basically involved and you are rather enmeshed in an endeavor. How are you making money? That is not really who you are.
Mm.
But I had always known deep inside that I am a storyteller, that I'm a writer,
yeah,
that I am someone who is great, and I'd like to think. It also comes from the family that I come from. You know, I am nephew to Mafika Pascal Gwala, one of the greatest minds and writers and poets of the, you know, Black consciousness,
yeah,
movement from the 1960s and 70s and so on. And so I've always been surrounded by books. I've read literally thousands of books. High school, I got kicked out of the library for reading too much. I mean, which is weird. Like, no, I mean,
some kind of
grade 10 in Kamana High School, Sister Mary George basically just said to me, you're reading too many books. When you get time to study and that sort of thing. So by that point, I kind of was in my mid 30s, and I started thinking about it, and I realized, you know what? I really am doing this, and it's putting food on the table. I was having the kind of life that I wanted when I left teaching.
Yeah.
House in the burbs, a wife, you know, 2.5
children.
You could
afford things.
I could afford things.
Yeah.
I said, no, man, let me put myself through some discomfort. I've never liked being comfortable. I've always done things and moved on. There are very few things that I have done and stuck with for sort of longer than 5 years. Even at Unilever, I lasted.
And then you wrote a column for 17 years.
And then I wrote, but because then, this is now exactly
this is
what
then,
I'm, now I'm
when,
doing exactly.
When you're out and you're in or in touch.
Yeah, you know. And so that's how it got there. So while I was at work, and I used mea culpa, mea maxima culpa to the powers that be at Unilever, on company time, I actually wrote, I just wrote all these satirical essays about life in South Africa and so on. And then during lunch time, went to La Lucia Mall, because at that point, yeah, I'd gone to head office in Durban. Looked at the books out there and I was like, nah, man, what I'm writing is interesting enough. This will get published. And I got published. Some of my best friends are white.
Some of my best friends are white.
And that's
by
how
the way,
this
I'm only second to you in having sold that book to. I love that book that I sold it to so many people. Like, you gotta read this book.
You gotta read this book.
This guy writes so well. Like I gotta say it, mate. It was an amazing book.
Yeah.
And I feared after reading it, like, will he ever better this?
Yeah. And I don't know.
Well, your columnist showed me that you can better.
Yeah, I know. I think that my writing has matured quite a bit.
Yeah.
The essence of it is still the same. I know I'm still writing about life and, you know, the absurdity that is life and the fact that, you know, this thing called human intelligence
Well, you're a typical private school boy. Like, you don't speak the English that we speak, Gina.
What are you talking about?
No, your English is educated.
Well, I do not know about that. I mean, I think that my English is extremely... It's very user-friendly. I think I use very user-friendly English. You know, you read some of my best friends. It's the easiest read.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. But people must have conversations with you and sometimes read. You know, you'd have a 38-word post, but it would be so like, will everybody get this, right?
On Facebook.
This fellow, like, where does he come from?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of people who write really well that I also read and I just think, oh my goodness.
Every time I think of your grammar, let me put it the other way. So when I watch, and I must say I'm addicted to this live commissions that we live by in the last 10 years or so. Every time I watch them, and I would be watching the Mazlanga Commission or even the parliamentary thing, I'm like, I'm grateful for these guys that you're not one of the commissioners, because you'd not only be dealing with the law, you'd also correct their grammar.
And it's not even, it's not even as if my grammar, like, you know, is anywhere close to perfect. But I mean, I must confess that I'm a bit of a Nazi grammar.
No, trust me, I know.
I
it's not a bad thing,
by
the way.
Worried, yeah.
And I found that people who are like that are also bloody good at their own mother tongue, right?
No,
these things go together.
I'm significantly worse with isiZulu. Yeah. With isiZulu, I don't apologize for it. You know, with English, sometimes I'm like, oh. You know, why would you be correcting someone's...
Why should I speak for the queen? Oh, the king.
Of course, I don't mind it so much. I mean, I don't hold back when I'm correcting a native English speaker's grammar. Mm. Oh, there I go to town.
Yeah.
And I think you should know this.
Yeah. But you then took a decision some years ago, which is, by the way, where I first... saw your content on social media. It was Twitter.
Well,
we call it X now. Yes. Who cares about what?
I've never called it that.
Yeah, it's still Twitter because I just call that tweet who owns it.
I just call it Elon's Twitter. that's what.
Yeah. Why did you leave Elon's Twitter?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I haven't deactivated my account.
Yeah, I know.
It's still there.
I still follow you.
And a lot of people are like, dude, you got such a followership quite a following on Twitter, you know, in excess of 60,000 people. You know, you could monetize this. Twitter became a space, you know, I'm not very good at censorship. I don't do very well because I am not particularly politically correct. And I was finding that a lot of the content that I was putting out on Twitter was teetering very, very close to me getting into trouble. I was very close to being cancelled because there are things that I will say that all of us think, that all of us know is just common sense. Mm. But you can't say them.
Can't say it.
But you can't say them. And I found that Twitter was that space. And also I was finding that I was spending days. I mean, I would get on Twitter And I'd end up wasting 3-4 days of energy. It's like fighting Helen Zille over stupid things, you know. And of course, you know, Helen Zille would then at some point just be like, I'm getting bored now. I'm bored. And I'm thinking, guys, just because you're just objectively wrong. You are wrong. You know, about a lot of things. You know, I mean, hey, draconian approach to stupid things. Like, I'm like, alcoholism is not a crime. Alcoholism is just a disease. Just treat a disease.
Don't, that's all it is.
You know, don't throw laws at alcoholism, you know, in the Western Cape. You know, what are you achieving by saying, oh, we'll close bottle stores on Sundays?
Yeah.
I mean, I drank for 39 years of my life. And as someone who I assume still partakes in what I call the amber colored, you know, the sweet nectar of the gods. If on Sunday bottle stores are closed, do you ever like seriously go, oh, flip?
No.
Everyone knows where to find alcohol.
Exactly.
So I found myself on Twitter arguing stupid things like that. And I just thought, you know what? I don't need this in my life. And it's going to go pear-shaped for me. Let me get out before I get into trouble.
So I can understand the part of being cancelled. Yeah. But the part of intellectual banter or lack thereof on Twitter, I tend to think there's no difference on the other side of the road. I mean,
you mean what?
Facebook.
Facebook, you know,
it has tested me a lot.
You know what Facebook is for me, but also as someone who writes, I really do tend to use Facebook as a doodle pad, where I just test some of my ideas because I can write long form.
Yeah,
so I can actually go in there and write 600 words, which is something really that Twitter doesn't, you know, quite do well. So that's for me just. At a practical level,
yeah,
I found that having to, you know, constrain my thoughts into, I don't know, 140 characters, 280 characters, whatever it is. I know it's you can write a bit.
You can write long now if you've got a blue thingy.
Yeah, you know
you buy that.
Yeah, which I never had.
Yeah,
I don't have it. I never had it on Twitter, and I've never had it on Facebook either. But the point there being that with Facebook. The big difference for me is Facebook, I have a village of people that are my core people that I know these are the people I'm speaking to.
Yeah.
So there are 10,000 that follow what I have to say. I don't really care. I really am talking to Rams and I'm talking to, you know, to Humuzo and I'm talking to my certain people. And you can have that because of the format of Facebook where it's like, here is a post. So it's almost like it's my home and people can come and they can talk. I don't know if you've realized, I hardly ever have any
I don't engage at all.
I'll not go to your hall on Facebook and start having interactions with people there.
No, I do
not
know. I don't do that
so
either.
I stick to my people. And then there I can be as harsh as I want to be, or I can be as forgiving as I want to be because it's
we know
like
you,
space.
Right? Yeah, so when you hush towards me, I know it's nothing personal. No, I know you're dealing with issues and then I don't start thinking, I'm going to ask a cool. Right?
Yeah,
like,
you know,
because that's what I stopped. I mean, there was a time when I used to engage and I thought,
there is no.
Point. Yeah. I mean, firstly, these people chose to follow me. I didn't ask them. And then they want to correct my views. Like, no, dude.
Not only that, sometimes you'll sit there and just as an example, you're talking about this bottle, right? And this is the post you wrote about. You wrote about this bottle. And people do not want to engage with what you said and your thoughts about this bottle. No, what they're telling you is, no, you shouldn't have been talking about this bottle. You should have been talking about this one. And you're like, don't tell me what to say. Yeah. Don't tell me what you're
right. But for me, what is worse, right? Yeah. I mean, it kills me.
Yeah.
So, today I was having this bottle in studio, you know, and I finished it so quickly because the conversation was amazing with Ndumiso. Oh, you privilege, you have bottled water. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get how people go left wing and on something that's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. And I used to ask, I said to this one guy, this is recent. I posted about the premiers of the Northwest. Now I just bumped into this poster and it showed me all the former premiers. And I said two things. the Northwest had more female premiers than any other province. I had forgotten this. Yeah. But two, I did not know who the current premier was. That's what I posted. You know, thanks to this, now I know the current premier. Somebody comes in. Yeah, but they were all useless. They didn't deliver. Like, oh, that's not the point. That's not what I'm posting about.
And you know, and here's the thing about writing a weekly column, which is something that you know. For me, I always think that this is gold. And so I mine that sort of thinking. Because sometimes when people do that, I sit there and just as I'm about to respond, and then I go, this is nothing personal.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be a bot, for crying out loud. I mean, it could just be that there isn't even a person on the other side of the account. And Dumisa, don't be so absurd as to take this personally or get really riled up about it. And to be honest with you, I used to be. I used to get very riled up with people. Not so much now. But the point there being that I then sit and I go in my head, why would this person think this way? And then, and that provides me with a lot of material to write about, where I realize that one of the things that we are not good at as a society, well, globally, it's a problem. That's why 80 million Americans have voted for, you know, for
him.
Whatever. Yeah. I want to give him more energy than that, more oxygen than that. But the fact that critical reflection is something that is solely lacking in society, that people don't really think deeper than what is on the surface. And it's got everything to do with how life has been set up, because who are the heroes? I mean, if you look at who people follow, who people want to follow, want to engage with, you actually realize that, you know, a lot of it is extremely so superficial. It is so surface deep. So people don't think further than just what is obvious. And then people, they don't have their own thoughts. So what they do is they engage with thoughts, with discussion based on who said what. And then that is going to be the thing. So for me, that I just find it fascinating, because I have to sit there and I'm, what is it? Is it cognitive dissonance? Is it confirmation bias? What is it? Is it lack of education?
Poor education. Just poor education, I promise you. But here's the flip side, right?
Yeah.
If you think about all the platforms that you've been on, and I mean, you got an amazing podcast with Khomotso currently, you know.
Still Uncaptured.
Going back to what you did on radio, you've brought it back into podcast, Still Uncaptured, I'm a fan. But won't you admit that kind of thinking and insisting on being this thinker who makes sense to a few of us is why you remain poor. Like, you know, you know, people are influencers there, and I don't know what they influence and why they influence, but they do it. And nobody comes to you because,
Dumiso is dangerous. He's too irreverent. He cannot be told what to say, the same way as Rams. No one can control you, right? But also the thing about it is the things that you talk about are not things that, the average person wants to really sit and listen to. But here is the interesting thing is that we forget, and I think that the powers that be, where they get it so wrong, is that there really is such a thing as a niche market. So you talk about, you brought up Khumuzo and myself and our podcast, Still Uncaptured, and it is significantly more popular than you would have imagined, because you would think, but these people are not talking about celebrities.
Nothing.
We don't care. We really are just talking about serious
stuff.
And not so much serious necessarily. At least the handling of the material is not particularly serious. We speak about it the way we do. However, and this is what a lot of people miss, is that this podcast, people just want to see numbers. So it is all quantitative. So no one looks qualitatively to who is listening to Rams.
Yeah.
And you actually think about who listens to Rams. These are the people who are possibly very likely captains of industry. These are the people that actually make the huge purchasing decisions. These are the MDs. And so when people will say, oh, but I don't want Dumiso on my radio station to be behind the mic because I will not get, which is actually not true because, geez, when we were at Kai FM, our numbers were...
We're crazy.
Yeah. When we did Uncaptured on Kai FM, which was weird. I mean, I think, I do not know how many other people did not have their contract renewed while they were the reigning drive time show of the year. but our numbers were crazy, have always been crazy, and so on, even when we did Good Morning Gauteng and so on. So what gets missed about what we do is that a lot of people that listen are also aspirational. Sometimes you've got to put content out there that people aspire to rise
to. Exactly. Yeah. Indeed. So, about 30 minutes after we started, yes. Let's get to why I called you here.
Yes.
So you posted on Facebook and got me exceptionally jealous and angry and agitated and this fellow about how you finally can sit and have whatever you want to have at whatever time you want to have because you don't have anymore a school drop off and pick up. But after all these years.
Oh, my God. These are my people that I come from. Thank you so much. You know, the fact that, you know, I am sitting here, we are recording this just in case, you know, someone watches it whatever time. This is January 2026. Because my firstborn is 31 years old, this is the first January in 28 years that I did not have stationery, uniform, school drop-off, school pick-up. And this is one of those things where I made certain decisions about how involved I was going to be in my children's life and so on, right? So this is freedom. You know, when Leliti and them were singing, freedom is coming tomorrow. Freedom is here for me now. I can do, you know, the other day I just woke up and I decided to go and have brunch.
Wow.
Somewhere, and I just arrived at 10 because I had no one to drop off at school and I had no one to pick up from school, no one to take to tennis, no one to take to cricket.
There's no madam you have to fight for at the gate of the school because she's pissed off with her gardener and you look like the gardener.
I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to deal in the morning with trying to get someone ready. Like we said, we're living at 7:30.
And for him. It's not even for you. It's for him.
There is nothing. I'm not involved with any projects. I'm not involved with getting there and dealing with, you know, like how, you know, especially when they're younger, you have those meetings on Tuesdays at like 6:30. You're coming from wherever you're coming from work. And you go to sit. And then they always make you sit on those tiny little chairs and this tiny little jacket. And of course, they speak to you like you're also 8, 9 years old. All right, Jackie, this is what we do. I don't have to.
Which is good content though for writers.
Great. I mean, I've written quite a lot of columns about just the things that happen, or parents that decide. You know those parents, the housewives clubs.
Yeah.
That are always at school.
Yes.
You know, and their kids will always be the prefects and the kids there. Oh my goodness, I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Oh, lucky you.
I don't have to deal with you.
I'm about to end that journey, but damn, I read that thing and I thought, oh, man. You know.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is an amazing thing not to have to worry about this. I mean, I just did my stationary run for the last time. You know, and then you sit because it's matric year, then you then have to discuss. So are you still going to be studying what you plan to study? Where are you applying? You don't have to deal with those things. They're done now.
They are done. You know, a bit obviously.
Well, of course, they're going into varsity.
This being January, we've had to, I mean, this person, you know, was I almost said fortunate enough. But, I mean, they worked, my son, Sihayo, I mean, he worked hard enough for him to actually get 3 film offers,
wow.
You know, from Stellenbosch, UCT and UP, and he made his decision and what have you. But he, I mean, within a 2-3 week period, he went from, yeah, I'm definitely going to Stellies. And then he was like, I'm definitely going to UCT. And then, no, I'm definitely going to UP. And then, oh, I'm definitely going to Stellies. And then he made his choice. But the thing about it is that you still had to deal with all of that. But it's like, I'm dealing with it and then,
I'm done.
Because I've got 2 others who are at uni as well, and I'm done with them. One is at UJ, one is at Vets, and so I'm done.
It is at this point that you realize that for 28 years, you didn't have a life, actually.
No, I didn't.
You thought you had, but you realize now that actually...
You know, on the day that... we went for his registration, and then we had gone to view residences and so on and so forth. And in the afternoon, I decided to just go to a clothing shop. And I realized in the entire 2025, I did not spend more than sort of 1,500 rand on clothes for the whole year. I mean, people spend that much money on clothes in a month, right? I remember I bought a couple of shirts. I think this is one of those shirts. And I bought a couple of shirts and I bought shirts like this, you know, I call this my Charlie Harper look, you know, from 2.5 Men.
Yeah.
Right. And shorts and some cargo pants and what have you. And I think that the total was like 1,100 rand. I'm thinking, I have just spent tens of thousands of rand. I mean, registering these 3 children, school in excess of like 60 grand, right?
Yeah.
And so on. But I'm feeling guilty because I've just spent 1,120 rand on myself. There's something off about that. Like,
crazy.
It's a form of pathology because I really have not lived for myself. My wife and I have not lived for ourselves. And so this past Saturday, we just decided, let's just go out and just splurge on just a very long lunch. We said, let's do this, you know. And only because we can. So this year for me, 2026, it's going to be pretty seminal. Because I'm going to live this year. You know, because now there's really not much, you know, keeping me sitting here. If I decide on a Tuesday that I want to go and, I mean, things that interest me, things like I want to go to Isandlwana and just have a look. I can just get in my car and drive to Sandlwana and sit and have conversations with the locals, whatever. Or if I want, whatever.
I want us to get into that, but let me round this one off.
Yeah.
And I want to say this to you and Teboho, well done. You guys have done very well. And, you know, when they have got into that sport and they go to university, it looks like it was a passage, right? Just a normal passage. Actually, it's not always easy. Not every parent gets to be that lucky that the kids would stay in school and then, you know, move on to university.
And there were wobbles. You know, there were wobbles also to do with health, with children, you know, and so on. I mean, sort of thing to be hidden. I mean, my second born, was diagnosed with epilepsy, you know, in the middle of COVID.
Damn,
I had to go pull him out of Kersney, and you know, things got...
It's crazy.
I know, it's crazy, the things you go through. And then you look at him now and you go, okay, you know, one didn't mess this up. We didn't mess it up.
Well done. Yeah. And I mean, and especially you, because I don't know how you don't mess up things. So every now and again, you're in a small jalopy, driving to a small town, and you're posting from an Airbnb kind of thingy and stuff like that. What are you busy with? That's keeping you busy.
You know.
And I'm asking that because I'm angry that I haven't picked up a book from the shelf in a while.
Yeah. You know, the things that I have been busy with, a lot of it are things that I unfortunately cannot even talk about because I have carved a little niche for myself as a biographer. I write a lot of people's stories.
Yeah.
But also, that's also because I have this obsession with history. I am obsessed with history. I'm obsessed with the recording of South African history, because one of the things that bother me is that Rams, as we're sitting here right now, and you whip out your phone right now, and I say to you, are you able to tell me who played in the 1984 Men's Day Cup final? Who was the referee? Who were the players? How many career goals do they have? South Africans, we have not populated spaces with our history. There is nothing.
Nothing.
There is nothing. We don't even have reliable goal scoring records, you know, prior to 1985, before the NSL season and so on. And so I have this, I'm obsessed with it, about people writing their life stories, because if I, and people think that when someone writes a biography, it's about them. No. I always say that if you've ever, you know, a lot of people have bought this book, Long Walk to Freedom, and it's like a nice coffee table book, and it looks nice sitting on the shelf. But I don't know how many people have read it. I've actually realized that most people who have bought that book have never actually read it, or The Dream Deferred and so on. Because so much of those books, for instance, and I'm only mentioning them because a lot of people know those books, or, you know, Odyssey to Freedom. The other day I was just looking at something. It's actually a history of South Africa.
Yeah, it is.
It's, people don't understand that biographies contain so much history. So when you see me in small towns, and I'm in Bloemfontein, and it's mostly because I'm probably there to conduct an interview with someone, or I am just going to find out, you know, what happened here. And but also some of it is also some of the things that I'm writing about myself. You know, I'm not, you know, recently gone to Ginsberg again to this Steve Biko Center.
Yeah.
Because I'm fascinated by that story. And I don't even think that story has been written about.
Not at all.
You know, it's only the tip of the iceberg that really has been written about. And so, but also I am fascinated. I think that the true story of South Africa resides in Ladysmith and in Ficksburg. And it doesn't reside necessarily in Durban or Johannesburg or Cape Town. I think that the real story of South Africa is the story of what happened in Greytown.
So,
yeah.
I like that because I remember when I sadly worked for Drum Magazine.
We'll talk about this later, why that was said. Yeah, but in case
I did a story of a guy who left Stutterheim,
yeah,
in the Eastern Cape.
Yes.
Came to work in Johannesburg and never went home until 34 years later when they retired. And I wrote a story of this guy.
Yes.
We got onto the train with him going back home for the first time to go see this place again. He had never gone back home. So that thing of small towns and stories, I mean, his story was completely amazing, that he couldn't even remember home.
That is a sad thing. But it also speaks to why it is that I think Khumbule Khaya is now in its, what, 19th, 20th, 21st
like that,
season,
yeah,
whatever. All apologies to Andile if I'm getting it wrong. But, you know, the story of South Africa is also a story of migration.
Yes.
It is a story of people being, you know, leaving where they come from and very often never coming back. I mean, I've got a first cousin who, you know, people keep on, he's spotted somewhere, but over 25 years ago, he just decided to leave and he's just never been back. And so I, those human stories fascinate me, you know, because human stories really reside in these small towns. I have found far more interesting. There are far more interesting stories in Vryheid than there are in Johannesburg, I promise you.
And far more interesting people, you know, people that you don't see every day. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to talk about my... You can invite me to your podcast to talk about the drums. The drums talk about it here. Like,
yeah,
those guys. Yeah. Anyway, so... As we conclude, I can tell people, and I think you guys should do that, you know, Still Uncaptured on Spotify, please catch this man's work. I can tell them to read your old stuff, old books that are still amazing even to this day. But
yeah.
I'd like to also tell them to look forward to something. What can they look forward to?
You know, it's so interesting that you... The conversation we've had has really mapped exactly where I'm going, almost chronologically, right? I am now at that point where The last time I published a book was 2014. This is now 2026.
Wow.
It's 12 years ago, right? And it's because I had, for the past 12 years, to suspend my own creations in order just to write things for a living.
Yeah.
To eat. And I ended up doing a lot of radio because I needed to eat and so forth. In 2026 alone, I will have two books published. And I have been writing a work of fiction for a while. And I've been talking about it, and I talk about it to put myself under pressure.
Yeah, that's what we do.
To put myself under pressure.
Accountability.
There is a particular project that I'm busy with, a biography that I am finishing, March, April, which should be on the shelves, and then I will have time to write and to finish the works that I've started. I have a book of short stories in me. Amazing short stories. Mm. You know, if there's one thing that writing a column has taught me, it's just the art of writing the short story,
yeah.
Right? And there is a work of fiction, a novel. I am also going to be writing, and so now I'm now talking about the next sort of 2, 3, 4 years, because I feel deep inside me, I still have another 30, 40 books in me, and I've got the time. You know, I'm 54, and you know, back when you were 54, people would be like, "Yo, you are 6 years
old."
But you see, I'll still be writing when I'm.
My father was old at 54. And I'm 55 now.
I know. It's your age mates, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of writing. I still want to write about certain historical events that I feel that we haven't done justice to. I'm still going to meddle in satire. You know, there's a book, and my working title, and by the way, my first book, which is Some of My Best Friends Are White, the working title was just talking, you can beep this out, was talking shit to the animals, right? And there's another one along the same vein, and the working title for it, and it probably will not be the title that wins with publishers, is A Nation of Morons.
Oh, wow.
A Nation of Morons.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be writing just like a whole bunch of satirical essays about just how, you know, how silly we are. And I can tell you, you know, some of those stories. I mean, one of the things about South Africa, being a satirist in South Africa is difficult.
It is hard.
It is hard to be a satirist in South Africa because, you know, satire is really the skill of taking things that are absurd, but then making them significantly, making them even more absurd, you know. But our news itself is so preposterous that what else? I mean, if I had said to you, you know, went to Netflix and I said to Netflix, I want to pitch, you know, a series, and the series is about how a minister of intelligence has a wife who is a drug dealer, they would have said, no, man, that's not realistic. But in this country, we had it.
Right.
So these are the type of stories that I'm interested in, because I think that in absurdity is where you find what is like fundamentally what people are about. And I think that one of the things about us South Africans, and it's all not all negative, but the reason that I like to talk about our stupidity and how sometimes we are morons is really just as a way of saying we have got the capacity to do so much better than we are. We really have got the capacity to do better than we currently are. And that is the whole point of satire. It's just to, you know, take the mickey out of people and make them hopefully go like, oh shit, we really are stupid.
Yeah. I sometimes feel stupid for trying satire because then people then comment and like, they don't get it. Like,
no, that's what I meant. Like,
but anyway, what it means, Tebogo, is that don't quit working. If he's going to be doing this kind of stuff, he's not going to be bringing dough into that house. So please keep on working. Thank you, my brother.
No, thank you.
I love your work.
Thank you.
I have all the time for you. As I say, sometimes you confuse me because when I'm feeling we're very tough high school. MLS, you know, like intelligence I'm a private school anxiety. Go to I honestly am waiting, even if it's just for 10 of those many other books that you think you're gonna bring up, please, I hope they happen. And thank you for coming out.
You know, one just hopes, not one, and but one mustn't leave it to the universe. So one must actively work towards it. I want to stay healthy, to be around, to do all the things that I still have. There's so much still to do. This, we are young men, right?
I know.
We're very young men.
Yeah.
We may not look it, we may not, but we're very young men. And there's still so much to conquer, so many more songs to conquer.
Friends, please follow his work, but you must read, and I mean you must read, Some of My Best Friends Are White, because it is the most hilarious thing you will ever read, and you are late by 12 years more than a number of years, but still read it, please. If you can find it, can they find it?
Oh, it's still very much in print. It's one of those strange books because it not only was did it stay for a very long time on bestseller lists. It's still in print. I think this is now the what? Probably over 20th edition. The other day I got the pittance of a royalty check from it still. So it's never died. It was, and this book, believe it or not, was published 19 years ago.
Listen, I was trying to conclude. So please find the book and while at it, subscribe. It's not either or. You can do them both, right? Subscribe to this content and his content too, by the way. I insist that you should do so. Thank you very much for watching this episode. From me, Rems Mabote. Goodbye and God bless.